Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have long snapper, magician, and survivor, John Dornbos, who's been in the NFL for a million years, and very interesting, moving story, and just an interesting dude. So that guy's story you're going to want to hear coming up in the news as well. First, Mercari, house cluttered with unused stuff, kids stuff, baseball gloves, stuff that doesn't fit anymore. Stuff you've only worn, like a dress that's only been worn once, or some old ice skates or something that are still good. How about you sell that stuff? Mercari, that's a selling app that makes it fast and easy to sell almost anything. Take a few pics, add a description, and it's listed that easy. Mercari even emails a shipping label when it sells. No awkward meetups. 500,000 plus reviews on the App Store. Average rating, oh, nothing, 4.8 stars. That's pretty darn good. Doesn't get much higher than that. Don't let that stuff go to waste. And I don't like throwing away stuff, and I don't like wasting stuff. Ship it and get paid with Mercari. Find Mercari on the App Store, or you go to Mercari.com. That's Mercari.com. Mercari, the selling app.
Carolla Drinks thanks Alan Parsons and Trace Vientos Ranch for the avocados at this year's World Championship of Guacamole. Visit Alan online at alanparsons.com and check out The Secret, Alan's latest record, out now. Thanks, Alan. For more, follow at Carolla Drinks and official WCOG.
When I find my way to that peaceful land, there will be...
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam, I had to call and tell you, man, I was watching a little bit of pornography on the internet. Enjoying myself, and then I heard the every 30-second beep of a smoke detector, and this was obviously in a nice rented house, God knows, somewhere in Malibu or something. It was not a backyard porn, but I had to continue on, persevere, finish up, clean up, and then call you to tell you about it. Thought of you while I was masturbating. Thanks, buddy. Have a good one. Bye.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
As long as I was on top, I got no problemo. John Dornbos. John is a magician, came in third place, season 11 of America's Got Talent, and has been a two-time Pro Bowler, long snapper, played 162 consecutive games in the NFL. I was looking at everything through the eyes of a long snapper. Two-time Pro Bowler is a long snapper. Obviously, that means you're doing well in the long snapping department, but it also must mean you're hustling down the field and getting in on some tackles, because a lot of guys probably make it through the year without muffing a bad snap, right?
Yeah, but then the longer you play, the more you realize the more plays you make, the more they're trying to take you out. Mm-hmm. So I learned that later in my career, I'm just going to be the safety. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let all the young guys go down there.
Yeah.
You guys make the tackles, and I'm just going to fill this safety role, and if somebody break frees, I'll be there to scrape it up. But and it worked. So that was my claim to fame right there.
But back in the day, you used to get down there.
Yeah, I mean, the game changed, right? So, yeah, early in my career, I led the league a few years. I was a linebacker, fullback early on. So it was kind of my way of kind of holding on to what I could perceive myself as. Maybe I'm still an athlete. Maybe mm-hmm. my colleagues will consider a long snapper an athlete. So, I used to love to hit people, man.
When I used to long snap, I'd kind of realize that, A, you can release a little bit early, and B, the C's kind of part. Mm. You can run straight down, as the crow flies at wherever the punt's going to land.
Shortest route.
You get a chance to get there pretty early. You're usually not the fastest guy, but the gunner's got two guys on him.
Yeah.
Nobody's on you.
And let me tell you this. I was never mistaken to be the fastest guy out there ever once in my career. So, as you progress, and when you get in the pros, now you actually have a man. So you're like an offensive lineman. So they're trying to block the punt. I wish we could release early, but you just never really had that chance. You got to kind of protect the punter and hold the guy off.
They had they've had the no can rule for a while, right? Where you're not allowed to try to blow up the snapper because you're in kind of a vulnerable position. Like if you're doing a shotgun, your head's up. But if you're doing a long snap, your head's down, right?
Yeah, and it's funny. So when the rule, so my first 8 or 9 years in the league, they could just blow us up. And dude, let me tell you, we got blown up. I mean, right. you're so vulnerable, right? And then the rule came out and it was like, you can't hit the snapper. So as snappers, we were like, this is amazing. Like, mm-hmm. this is going to make our job so much easier. But then as they started to fine tune the rule, it became, you're not allowed to line head up. You have to line up at an angle. So like if your nose is head up, your shoulder technically is not head up. So they can still come at you. They just got to come at you from an angle.
Oh, God.
And so what ended up happening is when they would line up head over you, they just put a huge guy and try and run you over. I'm cool with that. But when they now came on the edge, they put a real strong, fast guy, and it became more about speed, which made the job way harder, actually.
If they can get you to snap it and try to pop mm-hmm. up prematurely and block or defend or yourself or do whatever, you're going to skip the ball back to the punter. The tragedy, and then I got a lot of long snapping questions. There was a Ravens game.
Prepare yourself.
There's a Ravens game and a field goal attempt, and they drew the Patriots offside. And now quarterbacks not allowed to stand in the shotgun position and throw the hands right. around
Jerk
anymore.
The shoulders,
they're drawing the guys off. Centers, it's a gray area because they kind of look between their legs and then they pop their head up. But on a field goal, I don't know why you need to pop your head up after looking down. They pop their head up. Do you have that, Kalen? Guy popped his head up, and he pulled that guy. Like, he's between his legs. He's going to snap the ball. And at some point, he pops his head up, and he draws off the Patriots. And then it's the announcer's like, oh, that's a big mistake. The Patriots, that's a costly mistake. They shouldn't put... They were drawn off.
Yeah, you know, the only time a snapper is going to do that is to probably try and draw a guy offside.
Do you have a video of it? Maybe. Oh, sorry.
Oh, here we go.
Watch his head.
You'll see
when the what is that?
I mean, that's... You know what you're doing. And now the hard part
is... He's not looking for anything, is he? He's trying to draw him offside.
Probably trying to draw him offside. And most likely, there's not an official necessarily looking right at him. So that's
right.
why you kind of have a gray area where you might be able to get away with it because... They're looking at other stuff, mm-hmm. and it's up to interpretation, but it's kind of a shady.
Did you do that move?
Hell yeah, I did that move.
I did that move in high school.
You better believe I did that move.
Kalen, black and white, me in high school, 1981.
Oh, yes.
This ain't it. This is 10 years ago.
So used to get us the first down, coach.
Here it is.
Man, I'm in the white.
We're going on three. Light on one, hard on two.
Gotta give the hard count.
We'll snap it on three.
Well, that's Here's me what getting canned in high school.
But now, were you drawing him offsides?
Yeah.
I
brought my head up.
Good for
I did
you.
It. I tell the up man, do it on three, hard two.
Yep.
You go down, set, hut one, hut two, and I'd pop my head up, and the guy would can me, and the guy would be complaining, but the ref would just be moving the ball.
So I'll tell you a secret move of mine, and it only worked a few times, but the few times it worked, it was beautiful. You got a buddy lined across from you, he's dead tired, and you're like, hey, we both want the check to clear on Tuesday. What do you say we just kind of look good on film and call it a day? And he'd be like, man, I'm tired. I'd be like, cool. Don't block the punt. It's all good. Let's run down. Let's call it a day. And so sure enough, we look like we were going 100%, but we were going about 60. And let me tell you this. My job was to snap a ball and make sure that thing wasn't blocked. You ask me, I did my job. Mm-hmm. Lights out. If I could have done every play like that my entire career, I would have. I only got it about four times. But those four times were like, oh, it was the greatest thing ever.
How tragedy, and yes, I saw you on Brian Gumbel's show, Real Sports. Yeah, I saw you highlighted on that show. Father murdered your mother when you were 12. Where was that? What was the circumstances?
So I was living in Woodinville, Washington, and we were the Brady Bunch family. My dad coached the Little League, president of the league. My mom volunteered at the school, had a reading program. And so I was across the street with friends, and it was completely out of the blue. So I came home. My dad kept me from it, and I stayed with him all night. I left the next morning for a baseball camp. And now, look, I'm 12 years old, right? So you're not exposed to the evil side of life. And we didn't have the exposure of information that kids have today. And so I said, hey, where's mom? And he said, oh, she's at the club with friends. I didn't think anything of it, you know, and I left. He then turned himself in and was tried for second-degree murder. He pleaded temporary insanity. And he used a bench grinder and a sledgehammer. And it was really bad.
Really?
Really bad.
Jesus.
And so, you know,
was
I heard...
Where was she physically when you
they
were...
They were in the garage.
Jesus
and
Christ.
Was he mentally ill at that point, or was he was driven to rage? I mean, to
You know
drive.
What? It's... I think it was, you know, an act of passion, right? He lost it. I think he had some stuff going on, obviously. And he just lost it. And so... He did the unfathomable. He did the unthinkable. And so now at that time, you know, I heard you guys talking right before I came in here, and it's interesting because when you're 12, you get it. You know, you don't understand necessarily the magnitude, but you're figuring it out, and you remember it. And I just remember thinking for over a year that I'm going to wake up every day, and it's just a nightmare, and my dad's going to be here, and my mom will be here, and if my mom's not, then he didn't kill her, you know, but I'm still going to have my dad. And it was...
You lost both parents.
I lost both parents.
What happened to you in the media? Like, did you go to live with grandparents or
uncle?
So my mom's family came up from California, and they stayed with us up in the Seattle area during the trial. And then my sister and I lived in a temporary foster home for about a year, year and a half. And
together, or separately?
Yeah, together. And we went through the most intense therapy you can possibly imagine. And that therapy got us right. You know, that therapy got us on a track. And for me, it was a moment, it was a defining moment where I realized this therapist isn't telling me what to do. He's not telling me what to think. If this guy doesn't even care. Well, it's not about being right or wrong, as long as I'm saying what I'm thinking. So I finally realized, because you're embarrassed, dude. I'm walking around, I'm the kid whose dad killed his mom, and I'm the kid seeing the shrink at school. And,
yeah, the shame you have to carry is unfair.
And I blame myself for a little bit. I thought if I came home early, none of this would have happened, right? Or, you know, that's the way I thought. So you're making sense of all this. And, you know, therapy for me finally clicked when I realized this guy's not trying to tell me whether I'm right or wrong. He just wants me to get my thoughts into words. And I can't be wrong. So...
Your dad got out of prison in 04.
Yeah.
Was there a relationship with him after that, or where are you guys at now?
No. So, I hadn't seen him for 26 years, and I had times over my life that I'm like, I wonder what he looks like. I wonder what he's doing. Curiosity. And then my wife got pregnant and we had our daughter 5 months ago, and 5 months and 3 weeks ago, I said, it's time. And I realized that I'd had buddies and we'd go meet their dads for lunch. And I thought it was so cool that they're having lunch with their dad. And I never got to do that with my real dad. And so I called him, or I sent him an email and said, hey, I don't have any expectations. I don't want anything from you. It's been a long time. If you want to sit and talk, let me know. And I realized that I wanted to forgive my dad moments before I was going to become a dad. And I wanted to take the worst thing that ever happened in my life and find some silver lining in that. And find any motivation I could to be a better father to my daughter. And so when I went and had lunch with my dad, I sat with him. And I realized, for me, forgiveness, and I think for a lot of people, they think it's about winning and losing. They think it's about, I agree with what you did, I accept what you did, or the playing field is level, right? I finally realized that for me, it has nothing to do with him. I didn't need his validation. I didn't need him to say a word. It was strictly for me to be at peace with my past, move on, and find and feel everything about that relationship that was dysfunctional and wrong, everything that we missed out on, everything that could have been. I wanted to feel that all over again the moment that my daughter came out, to give her everything I didn't have. And I did it.
Would you allow him to have a relationship with your daughter?
No, I don't. There's just no reason. And I think it comes
to... You just needed to put that burden down for yourself.
Yeah, I needed to say three words out loud for the first time in my life. I forgive you. And I did it. To try and motivate me to be a better husband and a better father than what he was in our life.
You saw him, I mean, after the trial, I don't know what, you were 13 probably last time
Him. The trial happened, and then about a year went by, and we continued the therapy, and then he was sentenced, and he went to Walla Walla State Penitentiary, which is it's where the big dogs go, right? And part of the ending of therapy with the therapist that we had is, all right, it's been over a year. You now know what you think and what you feel. Do you want to go see your dad and tell him what you think? And my sister and I said, yeah. And so sure enough, we went to Walla Walla. And then that was the last time we'd seen him. We talked to him through a glass window. He picked up the phone, came in his scrubs. And now this is your dad. This is your hero, right? Mm-hmm. This is like your guy. And it's just, I think that's the moment reality set in. You know, I remember the clanking of the doors. I remember the cold cement. I remember the screams. I just remember about being a 13-year-old in prison. I remember looking around and just seeing just sketchy people, right? You're like, what the hell's going on? And I remember it got heated. I said, F you. He said, F me, F you. And then I basically said, hey, I guess I'm the man of the house now, so peace out. And that was the last I'd spoken to him until I sat with him about 5 months ago.
Is there anything he could have done or said in that visit that wouldn't have caused this 26-year span of not seeing him? I mean,
no.
You said F you, and he said F you back, which is weird. From his position.
Well, I think there's a lot of emotion, you know, and I also think that I try and put myself in other people's shoes, whether I agree or disagree with what they do, but it maybe gives you a better understanding of the decision that they make. And I wonder how I would have acted in that moment. And I think just cutting ties and letting go of everything and just going and surviving prison might have been the best thing. And a not dragging your kids through, what, 10 years of you in prison, whether you're going to survive or not. So I think it was just, go live your life, kid. You're better without me. Peace out. And wow, we were.
So he got out in 04, and then he didn't – did he try to contact you?
No. So it came out years later at Thanksgiving. And it actually came out like two years ago. I was with my wife, and we were all talking, and we all had a few drinks. And then my family said that part of the deal was that we wouldn't sue him civilly, and he would never contact us.
Mm-hmm.
And so he basically said, if you don't sue me civilly, I'm out. You can have the kids, no custody battle, and I'll never reach out.
Speaking of having the kids, who had the kids? What was your high school like?
Yeah, so I ended up moving down to here, Southern California, to Garden Grove, and my aunt, who's my mom's sister, and then my mom's parents, my grandparents, they raised my sister and I from junior high on.
How's your sister?
Rockstar. So she went to Creighton University. Well, she went to
she's a Midwesterner.
Yeah, so she's a neurologist at Creighton University.
Wow.
And you know, my sister, this is what I love about my sister, and I would say this to her face. She kind of ditzy, right? But then as soon as you go there, she just puts you in your place. And mm-hmm. she can take really, really complex subjects and make them very, very, like to a layman or like an idiot like me would understand it. Like, keep it basic, right? So my sister's an absolute genius. She's super fun, but she's not socially awkward. And you'd think she's just cool and like bubbly. But when you go there academically, man, she turns it on. It's like, holy cow, she flips the page and becomes just boom.
Wow.
The book, we should say, Life is Magic, My Inspiring Journey from Tragedy to Self-Discovery. It's available now on Amazon. You can bookmark us and click on through. It just helps. And live dates where John's doing magic. That's coming up at, let's see. Well,
everywhere.
We got the Borgata. We got Santander. That's in Pennsylvania. New Jersey's coming up. Just go to John, DoreNBOS. I got that right?
Yeah, man, you're killing it.
.com. I never trust their websites. find out all the live dates. So for you, maybe, I would say there's a kind of a benefit to early tragedy sometimes if you get into therapy. It's sort of like the guys who got sober when they were 19. Like, they just didn't have the decade of all the DUIs and all the fights and all the whatever. Then they found sobriety in their 30s or 40s or something. They kind of put it behind them. Most people don't get involved with therapy. Most 13-year-olds or 12-year-olds don't get involved with therapy. It's a blessing in disguise when you're sort of thrust into it, because you get this kind of wisdom that not only you're there to take care of the matter at hand, the tragedy at hand, but the stuff you learn, you take it with you and apply it to many other facets of life. Like, you feel like a very mature, you know, most guys who play in the NFL don't have the kind of wisdom that you possess. And I don't know if that's continued therapy or you just really benefited from what you got early on and took it with you.
Dude, everything you said is spot on. And I was at an age to where you're old enough, but you're not too old. And think about this. Like, I also was young enough that had I been 18 and I just didn't want to do it, there's nothing anybody could have done. So like you said, I was thrust into it. I didn't have a choice. And I just went with the flow. And I finally got on board, and it changed my life. It gave me a foundation. It gave me, you know, quote unquote, tools in the toolbox to have kind of an emotional awareness of myself and what's going on around me. And I'm so thankful that, look, if that's my reality, what happened to me happened. I'm glad it happened then for the sake of where I'm at today. I wish it would have happened later so I could have had more time with my mom. But given the circumstances, I couldn't have asked for a better outcome for where I am as far as on terms of finding happiness.
Where'd the magic chapter come in to your life?
It would have been way cooler had I seen like Hendrix or like Stevie Ray or like Clapton, but I didn't see those guys, right? Instead, I saw a magician. So instead, I wanted to be a magician. Then I saw this guy, Bill Malone, on TV who shuffled cards. And it happened as I moved down to California with my aunt. And here's what happened is when I would sit down and shuffle cards, the world just, the chatter just disappeared. Like, the world was quiet, and I wasn't worried about growing up. I wasn't worried about therapy, my dad in prison, losing my – I just wasn't worried about all these adult issues. And when I would sit down, are you ready for this? We only had two CDs, John Cicada and Yanni, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have a whole lot, right? So look, I can do John Cicada for so long. I would put on Yanni track number 9, Yanni's greatest hits. It's called Felista. There's a piano and a violin. And I would just shuffle cards all night. And it was just me being a kid. It was me just getting lost. And I found 52 buddies that never lie to me, and they always tell me when I'm wrong. And to this day, that's what I do. I sit and shuffle, and that's where I make my decisions, and that's where I just – I'm a kid again.
Oh. Is that the magic that you do, or is it tight, close stuff? Is it bigger stuff? I mean, I'm guessing, you know, you're not making the Statue of Liberty disappear, but is it – what I don't
close
know what to
magic.
Form – like what to call – did how to brand different
right,
forms
right, right
of magic.
Now Adam's trying to say, gee, you were into magic, that's cool. Like a buddy of mine's, hey. Like hey, you want to play football? I'm like, dude, I don't, football's for dorks, I like magic, you know.
I just got back from Vegas and I saw a lot of posters and billboards for Illusionist, the greatest of all time. So says Oprah. By the way, why does Oprah get to be a fucking expert on everything? Like, I get it. Maybe she knows couples or relationships or what it's like to be a young black woman growing up in a man's world. But don't start preaching about Illusionist.
Thank you.
Why do you get to be an expert at everything? Know what Oprah. I mean? I trust my own eyes. Who's the guy? There's a new guy out of Vegas. God, it's got like a German last name that starts with
Hans
a K.
Klock.
Hans Klock. It's
Hans
like
Klock and Sita.
His hair's flowing. His shirt's undone.
As it should be.
So
he is the stereotypical magician with the quailing, flailing
find
hair.
Find that poster,
man. Oh,
man. I Hans became Klock. Too messant when I passed that poster.
You know what? He's Klock everything. As a kid that loves magic, he's everything you love and everything you don't want to be. You know what I mean?
Is he good? Is he the next Copperfield? What's his thing?
Oh, he's been around a long time. He's an illusion guy, right? So that genre is all kind of the dancing around and the girl in the box and the big
performance.
Yeah, it's about the trick, right? So I think my show is magic is a tool to create a relationship with an audience and to tell a story. So my show is my life story, the good, the bad, and how I found forgiveness, and the magic complements it along the way, and it's cool. And now, if your show's not about the magic, well, the expectation's different, but then now people care about the trick you're doing. Now the trick is irrelevant, right?
Cool. Oh, there he is.
Oh, just killing it, man.
I passed under that billboard. My jaw was just hanging
you,
on
you
my
know what
lap.
I want to know?
I'm like, look at the hair. Look at the shirt undone.
The castle in the background.
That's right.
I wonder how many pictures they took and said, guys, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're how done. Many versions of that exist?
Yeah, right?
I don't know anything about anything. The illusionist guys, look, I respect everyone who gets to a certain level of everything except for DJs. I still have no fucking respect for them at all because Paris Hilton can do what they do. That's my answer.
There you go.
She can't snap in the NFL and she can't do sleight of hand with the cards, but she can push a button and stand there.
And go, woo!
Okay, and go, woo! So she can do what you do, DJs. But is this purely orchestrated mechanics? Like, should all the credit go to the guy who builds, designs, fabricates the gag? You know what I mean? Or to the person in front, sort of wave, moving the hands around and pointing the fingers? I don't want to.
It's definitely the guy that does nothing and just moves his hand around and points his fingers. That is definitely the guy that's responsible.
Like, how do they come up with these gags? I'll just call them gags. Like, do they do it themselves? Do they buy gags from other guys? Do they go back in time and do stuff that no one knows about that's 100 years old?
You know, so it's like music. There's singers, there's songwriters, and then there's singer-songwriters. Right. So there's guys that are great performers, but they can't create. There's guys that can create, but they can't perform. And then there's guys that do both.
Like your Penn and Tellers.
Yeah, Penn and Teller create.
Yeah.
Like they come up with some really cool stuff.
Right.
And what I love about Penn and Teller is they'll take years. They'll come up with an idea, and they will rebuild that thing for 5-6 years until it's perfect and then come out with it. So, you know, the behind-the-scenes process can be lengthy. It just depends on what your style is. Me, you know, I actually think it's fun when you don't really rehearse and you come up with an idea and be like, hey, guys, this should work. Let's go try it live. And then, you know, if it doesn't work, it becomes comedy and the audience likes it either way.
So what you do, so we were driving around. So Mike August worked with Paula Abdul for many years and basically explained she's a nightmare. It's insane, you know. And so we passed billboard in Vegas, like Paula Abdul's taking up residence. And I'm like, Mike's like, never. Like, right. It's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be a nightmare. She can't sing. Like, she can't do any of this stuff. And Mike's like, they're just going to lay down that track and she's just going to flap her lips along with it or whatever. And I'm like, they're just going to pipe in her music and she's just going to stand there and try not to fall over in high boots. And like, yeah. So that's sort of that, and then
its own illusion.
What you're doing is just sort of an acoustic guitar, just one guy with a bench pulling up a stool and pulling out an acoustic guitar. Would that be your version if there was a musical equivalency? Sorry.
And then every once in a while, the band would step in, mm-hmm. right? So I kind of I do a lot of close up stuff, and then we do the bigger stuff. But the bigger stuff isn't that. It's not the Hans Klock, you know. Mm. It's a lot of audience participation. You bring in the big props to fill the theater and make it cool. But I think, me personally, I'm proud to say that I feel like I bring a little swag into magic. You know, I feel like I make it cool and it's fun. And it's not about the trick. It's about the experience. And so, you know, when people leave my show, I just hope they go, dude, that was badass. Like, that was just cool. I don't need you to think I can really push over a palm tree or that I can really fly. I'm not going for that gig. But it's fun.
As somebody who, and I think I'm not alone here, who's been to the Magic Castle more than once, you are not the standard magician that we are used to seeing.
See, that's the biggest compliment in the world.
That's
right
what
there.
I'm saying.
Bring a little swag.
Exactly.
So here's the thing. So this guy hires me. He wants me to do the show, right? Good money. It's all good. And he says, okay, I'm going to send my tailor, and they're going to whoa. Tailor. He goes, yeah. It's a black tie thing. I don't do suits. Unless he's like, well, we're going to do it for this gig. I'm like, then I'm not your guy. He's like, what do you mean? You're not going to do the gig because you have to wear a suit? And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. I don't wear suits, you know? He's like, well, what do you wear? Black jeans, black polo, hat backwards, and a swag towel hanging out of my ass? You know, what do you think of that? And he's like, yeah, okay, that works too. So, you know, all the guys I played with, they would have the towel hanging out of their back when they'd run.
Sure.
And LaShawn McCoy, he's like, yo, dude, you so slow, man. You need to throw something back there, make you look faster, dorm boss. So in my show, I got a towel in there to make me look faster and bring a little swag into magic. People aren't expecting that.
Got to write down the D and the La. We're going to have to work out some transfer system with the La's, yeah, right. too. All right, let me hit Indochino, world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand, founded on the belief you don't need to spend a fortune on custom wardrobe. Suits, shirts, coats, and more personalized, and they can personalize the lapel lining and put your own monogram on there. Almost all their customer clothing is under $400. Simple. Choose your fabric, pick your customization, and submit your measurements delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. Get the custom stuff, not the black jeans and the hat on backwards. We're talking about something a little dressier. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. So go to Indochino.com, enter Adam at checkout, and get your discount, plus free shipping. It's beautiful stuff. I have Indochino suits. They always fit beautifully. That's Indochino.com. Promo code Adam. Get that 30% off your total purchase when you purchase more than $399. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. John, you hang out. We'll do the news right after this.
Spend Tuesdays with Dr. Drill.
Hey, let's suggest you listen to the Dr. Drew podcast. It comes out every Tuesday, and it is my chance to, I love doing it, it's my chance to really dig into people and find out what makes them tick, what's going on. It's a long form where we can get into material and topics that I just can't get into anywhere else, and it's a privilege to be able to spend that time really getting in deep. So please join me on the Dr. Drew podcast.
The Dr. Drew podcast, every Tuesday on Corolla Digital and Podcast One.
Give me the news with Grad, news with Gino Grad, breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad, trouble in the Middle East, celebrity drunk meltdowns. Eat news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
So something tells me we are going to see a lot more of this, and maybe depending on how this goes. USA Today reports that a Hollywood film company plans to resurrect James Dean, who was killed in a car wreck in 1955, and cast him in a new movie via special effects technology. Mm. So Magic City Films announced Wednesday, I do want to hear your opinion, Brian, it has obtained the rights from the Dean's family to cast him in a secondary lead role in a Vietnam-era action drama called Finding Jack. The movie, based on a novel of the same name, will tell the true story about the abandonment of thousands of canine units that were basically just discarded as surplus military equipment after the end of the Vietnam Vietnam War and the adventures that ensue when a soldier refuses to leave his best friend behind. That's according to IMDb. So casting of live actors and probably dogs as well for the film is underway, according to a new release from the PR company Falco Inc. And we'll see if there's more of this. His estate signed off on it. We're seeing estates sign off on tours of, you know, Amy Winehouse and holograms. And so now it's going to movies.
I just got back from Vegas and it's Michael Jackson stuff all over the place. And it's always, Mike always does it. Him dying's the best thing that ever happened to him. And then he laughs real hard. And I was going, okay, Mike. It's always weird when he does that. But here's what I would sign off on as far as actors who died tragically. They can star in a biopic of themselves of what happened that day.
Interesting. Yeah.
I would like to see James Dean do reenact that day.
Going
he was
Willow
driving
Springs.
Out to he was going to Button Willow. Oh. This shouldn't be Willow Springs and Button Willow right next to each other. It's the push and pull of tracks. Yeah. It shouldn't be that close. But he was driving out to Button Willow in his 550 Porsche and was hit and crushed and killed.
Is that Salinas?
Yeah, it's like on the way.
It's like way on the 5. I passed Button Willow. I used to drive to the Bay Area.
Every time you go on the Grapevine, at some point as you cross that intersection, there's a big...
It's the middle of goddamn nowhere.
Big cutout.
Mm. Sorry, Button Willow fans.
It's a big plywood cutout at James Dean, like right at that intersection as you go by on the Grapevine if you're going to like Laguna Seca or something.
Yeah, you do wonder how someone like James Dean would feel like this. Is it like, you don't get to tell me what I'm going to do in the afterlife? Mm. Or you were a big star then? Do you want to be a big star to a new generation? You know, how does the family come up with that answer?
Wouldn't be surprised if you see actors these days, older actors, Kirk Douglas, whoever, signing like, you know, contracts or some sort of will, you know what I mean? Like, do not use my likeness. A good movie is, I'm going to, you know, talk about Brad, the gambling expert, talked about the public going one way, so he's going to go the other way to be contrarian. A good movie is a good movie. If this movie's good, I'm down for new technology. I'm always down for, you know, something that's a little bit different. What I'm afraid of is this is a publicity gimmick, and they're trying to turn a dog into something people are going to talk about.
And is the CGI up to the task?
That's the other thing. I think this has more potential with actors who have a huge... James Dean made 4 movies?
This will be his 4th movie.
Yeah, he made 3 movies. How much footage is there to make a... you're making essentially a CGI James Dean versus, let's say you wanted to make... Well, I just saw The Irishman last night. Like, you can do things with Robert De Niro's face because the guy's got millions of hours of footage.
Did it bump you?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Not too bad, though. Still a good
also,
movie.
I don't trust the ne'er-do-well family members who want a camera check. Like, if I'm dead, Adam joked a lot, but he'd do gay porn. He definitely would do it.
He
talked about it.
He brought it up.
Yeah. I don't see why he wouldn't object to that. Just give me a check. And, like, Ellen's family be like, she'd do a Burger King spot.
Yeah.
I think she would. She didn't eat meat herself, but her character doesn't have to be eating it. Right. They could do an Impossible Burger.
Well, so let me ask you something. So you said that you think people might be signing off, like, don't do this. How many actors are now going into green screen rooms and just doing all these monologues
just
of nothing?
Laying down footage.
And saying, this is my grandkids' retirement
legacy,
here, and sell this later, and you guys can use this in whatever movie you want down the road.
The irony is that it's the James Deans of the world and the Hendrixes and the people who died young and didn't have a chance to do to Tupac. You know what I mean? Like, that's where the money is. It's not going to be with, I don't know, Kim Kardashian. We have enough Kim Kardashian. We're not going to need her after she dies.
Yeah. So how was The Irishman?
I can Bollywood that tomorrow if you want to.
And did you go to the
theater?
Did
you like it?
I did.
Was it amazing or just...
It's not amazing. There are some amazing moments and there are some moments of greatness. It is a long fucking
movie. 3.5,
right?
Mm.
And it felt like... I mean, you can't... I hate when people do this. Like, Casino's not as good as Goodfellas, so therefore... He did Goodfellas and he did Casino, and this is a little more of the same. And it's like, all right, he's hitting his sweet spot. And he's doing, you know, there's some good things in there. But
did you go to the Egyptian?
No, at the Landmark on Pico.
But we shouldn't.
It's very
in.
Good, and it'll probably up for Best Picture.
Okay, but if we walk in with an over the moon expectation, we might get it. Never good posture to enter a movie.
Correct. You go with an open mind and an empty bladder.
Right. Oh, I wonder if that app still exists. A million years ago, there was one called
Just
Run Pee.
Or Run Pee, yeah.
Yeah, and it would tell you what part of the movie you can go pee for like 2 minutes and you won't miss any plot points.
You know who I think came up with that?
Who?
the quarterback and his brother, Carson Palmer and Jordan Palmer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
Proud USC alums.
Yeah. Wow. So I played with Jordan, and they came up with that. And I'm like, that's actually a great – I mean
– it's brilliant.
We'll I remember hearing that.
Yeah.
And also now
my guess is for the Irish band, there are many opportunities to go.
Well, speaking of Irish, they're serving beer. Every theater now has got something on tap going, and you have a couple of pints as you settle in, and sometimes
Act Three starts.
It's time to get up. Yeah.
So Jamie Lee Curtis just penned this essay in Variety, and lots of very odd and interesting details have come out. So as most of you, I'm sure, know, her father's Tony Curtis.
Does she describe her penis?
No. They had a unique bond as a father and daughter. A lot of it was over drugs. She penned this essay on sobriety in which she recalls how their shared addiction would bring them together at brief moments. Jamie Lee says, quote, "I shared drugs with my dad. I did cocaine and freebased once with my dad. But that was the only time I freebased, and I did that with him. He did end up getting sober for a short period of time. And that was, he was very active in recovery for about 3 years. It didn't last, but he found recovery for a moment. Tony died of a cardiac arrest in 2010 at the age of 85. And she goes into some pretty great detail about drugs with her father.
See, John, you don't necessarily want a dad in your life.
Oh, Brian.
Gosh, like that's like the anti of what I want to be. You know what I mean?
Also, he's going to come back and CGI her right in the fucking face. Sure, like, hey, bitch, shut up. Sure, I didn't come back for an acting role. I came back to tell you to zip it.
Telling family secrets.
Jesus Christ.
That's hardcore when you're freebasing with your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty hardcore.
I know.
Would you guess that about the Curtis-Lee-Curtis relationship?
No. But, you know, every time you scratch anyone's lotto ticket, you just find so much craziness and dysfunction and everything. Like, there's just so much. And somehow, the bigger, the better, the richer, the more dysfunction, the more divorce, the more abuse.
Especially in that era, you had to keep up this image, the squeaky clean image. You know, you were a Hollywood star. And,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And think about, their name is
Bob
Ryan.
Crane. O'Neill.
And Tatum. And I mean, that's just, it's tough times.
It's more of a cliche that's true than it isn't.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. It's best to be boring. Your kids, you should
working on it,
everybody.
A nice, boring childhood.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned Michael Jackson, and another piece of his memorabilia is about to hit the auction block. The glittery white socks, not the glove, the socks that were worn for the first time he showed off his iconic moonwalk are part of a collection of items owned by the late Frank DeLeo. He was a former music exec who signed Jackson to Epic Records. The socks were worn during Jackson's performance of Billie Jean in 1983 TV special Motown 25. They come with a letter that Jackson sent to DeLeo proving their authenticity. Do you want to guess what they are expected to fetch at least?
Well, the socks are weird because they're not the glove.
They're not the glove.
Are you going to give us an over-under or are we just shooting?
Just the at least, just the bottom, what they're expected to fetch.
Were we way low last time we tried this? I can't
think
remember.
The time before.
Yeah.
I'm going to say $75,000.
Okay. $25,000 each for $50,000.
I'm going to throw this out there. $250,000.
Damn.
You are the closest without going over. They are expected to fetch at least $1 million.
No,
we will find out. It's coming right up. No. Well, it's basically next week, so we'll find out and see how close.
This is not a good time for Michael
Jackson.
That's
what I said. No one would be caught dead buying those socks.
Hold on, I know that guy dropped digits on 9-year-olds,
but
he could move.
Oh yeah, I always forget about that.
So remember, if you can dance, all is forgiven.
Get away then,
I know he molested dozens of kids, but that dude could move.
Dance. It's God-given ability.
I'm going to tell my fucking son, you learn how to dance.
You can do anything
to anybody at any time. Because no matter what, they'll just finish off with whatever they're saying. I know he was behind the second Armenian genocide, but that dude could move. They'll end every sentence with, but that guy could dance. Got to give him his props.
ABC will show another live recreation of two 70s sitcoms in front of a studio audience. It went really well earlier. They're going to do it again. The week before Christmas, a still unnamed cast will perform a classic holiday episode of All in the Family, followed by an episode of Good Times. The throwback feature was a ratings winner in May. ABC recreated shows from multiple Emmy winner Norman Lear. It was Woody Harrelson and Marisa Tomei. They did Edith and Archie Bunker. Norman Lear, 97, and we had him in not that long ago, and they're going to do it again. But we don't know the cast yet.
I love Norman Lear because he's 97. He still hates his mom. Still hates his mom. He'll still tell you a story about what a bitch and a hag his mom was, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's going to be me. If I make it to 97, I'll still hate my mom. Number one. Number two, I guess that's Jimmy.
Yeah.
And number three, I went to the party afterward. It wasn't at Soho House, but it was one of those things. I don't get high a lot, but I got pretty high.
Good for
and,
you.
And then it ran into Jamie Foxx, who was just done filming and like because they're shooting
yeah,
it live, and he like came over there.
It was the valet. It was the valet driver.
He was wearing a blue vest, and he said,
"Had your keys."
I was like, "Oh my god, that's Jamie Foxx! Like he's such an amazing performer." And he kept he spotted me, and we're talking, and he kept going, "It's Adam, the legend, He kept calling me a legend, and I was high, and I was freaking out, and it was like the greatest moment of my life.
So who's to say if it really happened?
Yeah. I don't know. Who said that? I think it was Mike who probably. Oh, God, was Mike there? Yeah, Mike must have been there. I can't remember. Anyway.
Well, if they're doing it again, they're going to be two great casts for sure.
After parties. That's what I'm looking for.
So you'll tell us about the next one.
Yes.
I wonder if they'll have this at the after party. Alien Cat House. That's a UFO-themed brothel in Nevada. They just brought a sex robot for clients who want to have a sci-fi-inspired sexual romp, and the reason for it is awesome. Mm. The brothel's management wouldn't disclose which type of robot they got, but they did say it would have artificial intelligence capabilities and would allow the brothel to cater to customers with fetishes that humans aren't interested in doing. So
I've
at this point
say,
at the cat house, what is off limits that this robot's going to be subjected to?
First off, Roomba's going to have to up their game because if they're doing things that are off limits to regular whores, we're going to need a cleanup. Equally as powerful.
That's true.
Has the computing power as one
right.
of the crazy whores you can put in, with double jointed and we can have nostril sex with and the kind of stuff that normally.
Oh, holes don't exist.
They won't let me. Yeah. I mean, other, Dennis Rodman. Damn it. Who's that tall guy went there?
Lamar Odom.
Lamar Odom do.
Right.
That's number one. Number two. It's the oldest profession, but they may be out of work.
I know.
Finally.
You know what I mean? Like, forget about the automated trucks and the cars. If the world's oldest profession is outsourced to robots, it's over, man.
Old is new again.
That's it.
And guess what? It gets worse. Mm. Sex workers at Alien Cat House who spoke to the Daily Star had mixed reactions to the news, which is coupled with the debut of Teledildonics. That is a service for remote
That's
clientele.
My production company. I just patent Teledildonics. Why? Are they stealing my production company name?
I
had cards printed up.
You're going to have to talk to them because this is
I got
service.
A magnetic sign for the car. Come on.
This is when you're not there, but you still want to have
a
sex?
A silhouette of you typing Teledildonics.
Ripping it out of the typewriter.
Well, there's a guy named Brad Dilford, and then Donick Carey, who's a funny writer, used to work for The Simpsons, and I thought Pictures or Television or whatever.
Was in the right place.
Maybe I should have swapped the order, but Teledildonics, I thought, sort of said the future in production. I don't know why everyone laughs every time they honk when they go by my car. Anyway.
It's funny sounding. I think you have to understand that. I mean, I don't think you're laughing at the content.
The guy's last name is Dillard, and then there's Donna Carey. So
right.
I don't know how
to make sure you're not getting.
It's just funny orally. You know
okay.
what I mean?
I don't even know why you're saying oral. All right. So, wow.
Yeah.
All right. So here's what's got to happen. Some Japanese businessman is going to have to take one for the team and have his hog horribly burnt. By a battery mishap,
short circuit.
Like when the vape, the sticks start catching on fire at the airport, and they're on the airplane. They're like, we got to ban these things ground them for 3 years until we can get to the bottom of this. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean,
because it's moving.
Unless that's what you're shooting for.
Yeah, that could be part of his thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He likes to roast it.
Yeah. God, I talked to Will Ferrell for a long time at this part. This is great after. Yeah, Wheelhouse is where this thing was.
Where's that? I've never heard of it.
West Hollywood area.
If you have to ask.
Wheelhouse.
It's a beautiful house that was bought and renovated and turned into kind of like a Soho house, the house.
Cool.
You know what I mean? Like it's got all the accoutrements
like a residential
and everything.
Looking,
but it's there to party.
Yeah. I get it.
Mm-hmm. All right. What else about
robots? Oh, I thought you were going to tell us more about the party.
Oh, I can't remember.
All right. So an English teacher at a private school in China's Inner Mongolia region was forced to make a public apology after having bought a fake tuberculosis diagnosis online just so he could take a longer vacation. So here's how that went down. The teacher, identified only as Mr. Du, reportedly paid around what would be $67 for a fake chest x-ray and a doctor's diagnosis, which showed he was suffering from TB. And then he presented the documents to his employers. He hoped it would buy him a couple of extra days on vacation. Only he didn't consider how serious a tuberculosis diagnosis is because it's so contagious and so potentially life-threatening. Mr. Du's whole school was forced to pay for the medical checkups of every one of his students to make sure they hadn't got it. And guess what? Mm. Two of them did have tuberculosis.
This is like one of those sitcoms where the guy's like, I want to stay home from school. So they take the thermometer and they hold it over the open flame.
Yeah.
And then they go, 113 degrees. You're going to have to be airlifted. And isn't that this?
Exactly.
Bueller.
Exactly. Bueller. So basically, then he had to get another fake one to be like, no, I'm clear. I'm fine. It all cleared up on its own. None of the parents of the students believed that because there's scarring after tuberculosis. It takes forever to get rid of it. So they knew he was lying. So he had to apologize and he did not get his extra vacation days.
Let me hit Geico real quick here. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket. It will be the best thing you do all day at geico.com. Spend a couple of minutes and find out just how much you could be saving on your auto insurance at geico.com. All right, let's do one more.
All right. Well, Richard Gere is set to double down on diaper changing duty because his wife is reportedly pregnant for the second time in less than a year. The 70-year-old actor and his 36-year-old wife welcomed son Alexander 8 months ago. And according to Hola magazine, they're ready for round two. Though they haven't made an official announcement here, they have used the Spanish-based magazine to break the news in the past. Now, they both have other children as well.
What's his wife? What does his wife do?
Alejandra Silva. I would imagine she is very beautiful for a living.
That's great. Like, no matter how many how centered a guy is, or how much he likes to hang with the Dalai Lama or Tibet, he still wants some young pussy at the end of the day. You know what I mean?
Isn't that what we all want?
We all do. Yeah. And I just feel like, I don't know, David Spade announces it, and Richard Gere pretends like he's this other guy who's living on a higher level. But when the dust settles.
Everybody's on the same page.
Everyone's on the same page, right?
She's a very attractive woman.
Yes, she is.
There she is.
And look, God bless him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keeps him young.
Mazel tov to the young couple.
That's right. Okay. That's right. It keeps me young. Living with someone who's never heard of a rotary phone keeps me young.
That's right. Young at heart.
Has no idea who the Doobie Brothers are.
Doesn't know what a dial tone is.
Favorite show is Saved by the Bell.
Doesn't know what a dot matrix is.
Keeps me young.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Doesn't know the sound of a dial-up.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just announce this really quickly? Because God forbid we don't get to it at some point. We do have some more details on Dolly Parton's Heartstrings. That is an 8-movie anthology on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It is going to be based on many of her songs. Jolene, If I Had Wings, Down from Dover. I'm a big fan. Two Doors Down, the Old Bones, J.J. Sneed. Never talked about that song. It's quietly a great song. Cracker Jack, great song. Sugar Hill. Fans will be able to see a lot of familiar faces. Julianne Hough and Delta Burke will star in a few of them.
Mm.
It does begin streaming on November 22nd. Everybody, get on it.
Wasn't Delta sort of famous for sort of swinging with having the weight swings? Mm-hmm. Was that her thing?
Yeah. Remember she was on that show? I think it was HBO First and 10.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very slim, like, you know, NFL franchise owner.
She was like a beauty queen back in the day.
And then Designing Women took a turn at some point.
But she was one of the first ones to get kind of shamed. And then there was a backlash about, you know, body image shaming. I mean, that was all like 80s, 90s stuff.
A lightning rod for that.
Mm-hmm. So it was on the cover like National Enquirer or something, like Look Who's Been on the Way or whatever. So
right.
One of those kind of constant fodder.
I never click on those. You should see what this Baywatch beauty looks like now when you hop on the internet. You ever see that stuff? It makes me feel dirty. Mm. Like, sure, look, it's, you know, she was 31 and now she's 54. Like, I'm guessing she's not the belle, the ball. Maybe she put on a little weight. What do I Why do I have to get down into the dirt and roll around?
I'm with you. People are allowed to age. It's not a punchline.
I disagree.
Brian.
Speaking of which, I saw the same day as an Irishman, Terminator, Dark Fate.
Jesus Christ. Why is everyone's life so much better than mine? You know what I mean? I think about that all the time.
It's for work. Okay. Linda Hamilton coming back as Sarah Connor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, she was good.
Was it a movie?
It wasn't as good as The Irishman.
I got a.
it's okay.
I got a text from our producer.
It's very okay.
While I was out of town, which was No Safe Spaces, my movie beat the Terminator movie at the theaters it was at. Not nationwide, just at the theaters they're at on Monday night. It just beat it. And all I could think of is, God, that Terminator's got to suck. That's all I could think of.
Patented self-esteem.
I had to go the other direction and go, something must be wrong with that movie, because if my movie beats it on a Monday night in Denver or in San Diego, there's something wrong with that movie.
I have no idea what the Rotten Tomatoes score is. Matt, you could probably look it up for Terminator Dark Fate, but I'm guessing it's about
69.
Oh, my. That's not bad.
You know what? I rarely agree with you, because when you say, like, this movie's getting a woke bump, because a lot of times that's your... I think this movie's getting a woke bump.
The woke bump exists. We just have to figure out
which
when
movies
it applies
to. I do think it applies here, because this is strong female characters, female protagonist, female protector, female... and it's okay.
I think all movies...
It's pretty okay.
...can have a woke bump, or they can take a dip, sort of depending. But it's not like... Well, we do it on this one, we don't do it on that one. They just get a little 10 or 15% push
if there's
a strong female who's kicking ass at at the lead. That's how it works.
But it's definitely not across the board. Like the aforementioned John Wick. That's just a white dude going to other countries and killing massive amounts of people. They were probably in the 90s. Yeah. Those are really highly rated movies.
Yeah, there's a weird... there is a category that I can't explain, like a John Wick that people just love. And there's cartoon, there's Superman stuff. I mean, sort of comic book stuff. Mm. But what I'm saying is like... Captain Marvel was like not that good a movie as it pertained to the other ones, and it got, I don't know, it's in the 80s or whatever. The people, I don't have any beef. Here's my woke bump. If John Wick is a 91 with the critics and 91 with the people, then he earned it. If I see a movie is like 82 with the critics and 54 with the people, and it's a big broad movie, then I smell a woke bump.
Broad
movie.
By the way, if you want to watch a movie that is just fun and hilarious, and you will laugh out loud, and it's just a great movie to end a long, stressful day, we finally got around to, because we just forgot, we haven't had any time, to watching the Between Two Ferns movie. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I highly recommend it. Just cracking a beer and putting that on at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think I'm at the... In the credits?
You are in the credits.
Yeah.
You and Malala Yousafzai get confused.
It couldn't have been written down anywhere, right?
These are definitely improv outtakes.
All right, let's see. Do we bring it home?
We'll bring it home. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Teledildonics.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Get some new business cards made up, man. Just make a note. I'm hearing it now. You know what I mean? When I was just taken.
So we're going to see the sailboat.
Diller and then Donna Carey and kind of doing a thing and putting it together. I wasn't there. Now I'm there. Simply Safe. You shouldn't feel unsafe at home, period. So how about you get yourself some Simply Safe? You do what we do. You get Simply Safe. Two eyes. SimplySafe.com/Adam. Let's see. Live events. You can go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live events. I'm coming to a town near you doing stand-up and not Taco Bell material. It's my stand-up special. You can get that on Chassis and Amazon and Apple if you like. And check out our YouTube channel. We put all the comedy up there. YouTube.com/AdamCarolla. Let's not forget about John in his book, Life is Magic, My Inspiring Journey from Tragedy to Self-Discovery, available as we speak on Amazon. Go to John, DoreNBOS, to find out where he's playing and where he's going to be, and where he's going to be weaving his magic throughout the United States and beyond. John, this was fun.
You guys are rock stars, man. This is a dream come true. So I love it. Thanks for having me.
Teledildonics.
Come on.
Crank Yankers on tonight, 10:30 on Comedy Central after South Park. So go check that out and go to No Safe Spaces as well, coming out in Tampa, North Carolina as well. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for John Dornbos and Gina Grad and Bald Brian saying mahalo.
Gee, you were into magic. That's cool.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Go to adamcarolla.com to find out where he's going to be. And call 888-634-1744 to leave him a message before he gets there. Subscribe to Take a Knee for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at adamcarolla.com. Also, subscribe to Carolla Classics because it's a damn good show. Tickets and info on everything at adamcarolla.com. We'll be right back.